Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Institute of Welsh Affairs. The IWA is Wales' leading independent think tank, with a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through policy research and advocacy, our online and print publications, which provide platforms for robust comment and debate, and our agenda-setting events. We're a membership organisation with members across the country and far further afield. We are funded by our members, the events we run, and independent trusts and foundations. But first, before we dive in, let's do some introductions. I'm Will Henson, the IWA's Policy and External Affairs Manager.
Hi, I'm Harry Thompson, the IWA's Economic Policy Lead.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jack Watkins, and I lead the IWA's Foundational Economy Project. A few weeks ago, the IWA held a two-day summit dedicated to the future of the Welsh economy. It's become a bit of a cliche to say that Brexit, COVID-19 and the climate emergency have reshuffled the cards of how we think about the future of our economy. We wanted this summit to be an opportunity for experts across the board, but also policymakers and politicians who will have to make the decisions that will steer Wales forward, to gather and discuss. Unlike our usual format, this event wasn't recorded and will not be released in its entirety to the public. Instead, we will give you, our listeners, some insights into the highlights of the summit and what was discussed there.
First, for those who did not have a chance to attend the summit, it included Q&As with Vaughan Gething MS, Minister for Economy in the Welsh Government, and Neil O'Brien MP, Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State for Levelling Up the Union and Constitution at the Department for Levelling Up. We then had three panels, one on the UK Government's Levelling Up agenda, one on decarbonisation and the everyday economy, and a final discussion that focused on the impact of COP26 on the Welsh economy. We will be talking about each of them in turn.
So the questions are, how do we get more inward investment? How do we back the scientific strengths we've got in different parts of Wales? And how do we use the different funding streams that we're providing through the Levelling Up Fund, the Shared Prosperity Fund, and the Community Renewal Fund to really drive economic growth and community renewal in all parts of Wales? When it comes to opportunity in public services, how do we do more on prevention to close some of those huge gaps in life expectancy we're seeing both across the country as a whole and within Wales? How do we find ways to back community spirit and community pride and get behind community organisations that do so much good work at the local level? And last but not least, how do we back local leadership and local democracy? We've got devolution for Wales as a country as a whole through the Local Growth Fund and the Shared Prosperity Fund. We will be able to back the priorities of local government within Wales. We're also now seeing the emergence of regional tier of government in Wales and increasing cooperation between local governments through the groundbreaking growth deals.
We started the day with a short video address by Neil O'Brien MP, the Parliamentary Under-Secretary of State for Levelling Up the Union and the Constitution. As you can guess from his job title, Mr. O'Brien is fairly busy, so he only had a short discussion. But in it, he put across some of the many different ideas that are influencing the UK government's Levelling Up agenda. The set of questions that the Under-Secretary of State poses cover a very broad range of topics and areas of government policy. We got the sense that the work going on behind the scenes in Whitehall to develop Levelling Up involves deep analysis of structural problems. However, as many commentators have noted elsewhere, it's hard to see how a set of funds that will probably add up to less than what the UK received from European structural investments can really make much of a dent in these issues, particularly if the plan is to try and keep the focus on all of these policy challenges. From the Welsh perspective, it's very interesting to hear some of the things that the Under-Secretary of State had to say about local government. Previous ministers since 2016 have been very clear that devolved administrations won't play a role in levelling up and that money will go to local government. However, all the Westminster gossip suggests that actually the UK government is maybe realising how difficult it is to work directly with nearly 400 different authorities, each with their own sets of circumstances and needs. When Neil O'Brien talks about local leadership, there's a good chance that he sees the need for reform to create stronger voices, potentially through metro mayors or directly elected governors, as well as combining together authorities to create bigger geographies. Something to look out for over the next year is whether the UK government tries to expand these new structures into Wales, as it did in the past with city and growth deals, or whether we end up with a situation in which local authorities here are competing against some very big strategic bodies in England for the same pots of money. We had some fascinating insights from Ant Pickles, a leading Conservative Party organiser, tourism industry leader and IWA trustee.
one of the things that is common across all of the UK nations is that we do have an issue around productivity. We've got an issue around aging infrastructure. And alongside that, you know, you've got this this issue with opportunities being focused in the cities and not necessarily, you know, evenly across the country. So Levelling Up will be aiming to set itself some objectives to change the emphasis on those three really important issues, because ultimately they are what the UK's competitiveness is based on.
Ant provided some welcome reflection on the bigger picture of regional development and what it means for the Conservative Party. Where we had a fairly hopeful address from Neil O'Brien MP, our question and answer session with Vaughan Gething was perhaps a bit more downbeat in many ways. The Welsh Government Minister for Economy emphasised the Welsh Government's twin concerns about the Levelling Up agenda, governance and funding.
The structure that's been introduced is one that puts MPs with a form of decision-making role. They've got to apparently sign up or support the way that the funds have gone in the pilot round. If that's carried forward, that gets really messy. And that's messy in a number of different ways, because local authorities are the main delivery agents for the way that the pilot rounds have worked, and they often have more than one member of parliament. Not only that, though, but it cuts across regional and national objectives, like where we are with apprenticeships, like we are with the Development Bank, for example. And we know that if we can't fund those through replacement funds, and we have to make incredibly difficult choices within the government.
Some of the comments on the role of MPs are quite interesting here. Firstly, it highlights some of the tensions between the roles of members of the Senate and members of the House of Commons. Generally, Welsh MPs have seen their roles softened since 1999, including restrictions on the impact of their votes on devolved matters. And this is probably the first time since then that power has gone back the other way. It could create some interesting dynamics within the parties, as we can expect a number of MSs from across the Senate to share the minister's concerns here. Regardless of party, no one likes having responsibility taken away from them. So it'll be interesting to see how the different parties and representatives manage relationships with their counterparts at the other end of the M4. On resources, there was a frankness about the minister's comments on the budget that hints at what we can expect to hear a little more of later in this Senedd. The Welsh Government is obviously preparing for the eventuality that it will be unable to deliver on its manifesto commitments on things like apprenticeships or potentially the youth guarantee because of the loss of European funding. And there could be implications for other Welsh Government priorities, like the development of corporate joint committees, particularly in light of what we've heard about local government reform. I think it will be hard for any party to make too much political capital from this, because the same would have been the case whoever was in government here in Cardiff. It's interesting to see that the Welsh Conservatives' own sensible ideas for an economic development agency, something that Russell George outlined in an article for the IWA, would fall into this category. Nonetheless, I think we can expect to see a period in which one government is very positive about its investments in Wales and the other is very negative. And we're all going to have to work very hard to cut through these arguments in order to hold both governments to account. So, Will and Harry, what were your reflections on the discussion we had with the ministers?
I think Neil O'Brien MP was really interesting. And I think it reflected the sort of afterthought that Wales is with regards to Levelling Up, and I think it's a very England-centric policy. That's not to say that it isn't an attempt to extend UK government's reach into Wales, but I think that in terms of them understanding the structures of Welsh local government and the needs and the way that they work, I think that's becoming clear that there's more work that needs to be done there in terms of understanding that.
So I think Vaughan Gething made a really important point elsewhere in the discussion that we learned from the early days of EU structural funding that lots of small projects isn't something that can move the dial in terms of economic policy and economic development. I think we're now looking at a situation where the last announcement of these funds, there are 160 different small projects across Wales with different pots of money for different schemes on things like skills in different local authorities. So there's not going to be a really easily understandable level of consistency for people in Wales of where they're going to and where they're getting these skills projects from and being delivered. And I think what you also do is you lose the ability to bring all of those pots of money together into something that really can move the dial in terms of economic development. So you're looking at things like the South Wales Metro, where there's a big pot of lump some funding for that South Wales Metro project that'll make a really big difference in economic development. And I think this, one of the main economic policy concerns I have about this policy is that we're going to lose that and it's going to be replaced by smaller pots of funding.
So after hearing from the ministers, we moved on to a panel discussion to hear some different perspectives on levelling up. We heard some very powerful reflections from Rob Stewart, the leader of Swansea Council, particularly about the challenges that local authorities have faced in the process of bidding for the Community Renewal Fund, which is the pilot scheme for the future UK Shared Prosperity Fund. We've heard a number of similar experiences from local authorities across Wales that we've engaged with as part of our work on levelling up.
Having been the leader of a local authority that's just been through the early stages of submitting bids into the current process, I've got to say it was pretty challenging because we were given almost no time to prepare bids. They had to be rushed in by a certain deadline. And then, of course, the money's got to be spent for some of those funds by the next couple of months. So what that does, it means that you then don't have a strategic view of how you're going to deliver your programmes. You don't get the full benefits.
Much of the discussion in this session was focused on how we in Wales can make the most of the levelling up agenda. On this, we heard some interesting reflections from Dr. Helen Tilley of the Wales Centre for Public Policy. Helen highlighted the importance of having a shared vision for what economic development policy is trying to achieve, noting that shared objectives would help Welsh authorities and ultimately the two governments to overcome differences of opinion about funding and responsibilities.
I think if we have an underlying vision that we're all working towards, that's got clear priorities, clear ways of working, and that's in place for Wales, so there's a clear economic vision for Wales, green economy, whatever that might look like, emphasising key industries and the end result that we want to get to. Even if we are faced with short-term funding, then we can link that short-term funding into that vision, so that we could almost see it as see the funding as shorter-term phases of a longer-term vision.
There was a clear sense from our discussions that productivity would have to feature strongly within this shared vision. It's interesting to reflect on this because in many ways, the UK government in its levelling up agenda is arguably moving away from thinking about productivity in the explicit way that, for example, the European Regional Development Fund targets productivity in measures like GVA per worker. Instead, thinking about less easy to define concepts like local pride. Nonetheless, both our panel and comments from the audience suggested that there's still strong interest in boosting the strength of the Welsh economy. Professor Paul Boyle, Vice-Chancellor of Swansea University, talked in detail about how universities could play a greater role, not just in high-end research and development, but in boosting local business.
Policies that allow us to think about how research innovation can help drive local economic growth. And I think there's two approaches to that. One, I think you need a network of institutions across the UK that can act as anchors or lightning rods. And I obviously think universities could be a good network that you could use to bring partners together to think about how do we help people and SMEs and businesses and other organizations, not necessarily all with blue skies research, how do we make sure that some of the, you know, not necessarily the highest sky, blue sky research, but some of the more general research is fed out and that people can take advantage of that. And secondly, I think we need policies that really identify local clusters of real excellence. I think for Wales and for the UK, we can think of pockets of real excellence that at the moment I don't think are getting as much investment as possibly they could. And that's another way of addressing local drivers for economic growth, I think, through research and innovation.
Finally, we heard a number of reflections on Wales's long history of economic development programmes. One thing's clear, European funding is now in the past. And while it didn't fundamentally alter Wales's economic trajectory, there are clearly a large number of lessons to be learned. We were joined by the Wales Cooperative Centre, who were our partners in delivering the Economy Summit, and their chief executive, Derek Walker, had some interesting insights into the experience of delivering European programmes and how Wales had, over the decades, developed a distinctly collaborative approach.
We tried to talk about Wales as a cooperative country. I think, the size of Wales does help with this sort of thing, collaboration, because, you know, it's a small place and organisations can connect pretty effectively and easily if they seek to do so. I think this, you know, since devolution, this approach has been engendered, hasn't it? It has been encouraged. So the partnership councils, social partnership council, business partnership council, third sector partnership councils with Welsh Government have supported a collaborative way of approaching issues that have been of concern to Wales. You know, even the rhetoric of the government's, the Team Wales rhetoric sort of encourages this kind of approach to things. So I'd like to think that we were good at it. I am sure we've got more than we can do that would be better. I've obviously, you know, obviously seen very good examples of this in other parts of the UK. So I wouldn't like to compare and say that we were any better than elsewhere. But I think this is something that we've sought to promote in Wales and value in all spheres. You just look at the social services and wellbeing, look at the Future Generations Act. It's all about collaboration and working together with customers and clients. So it's right throughout our policy and legislative and program framework.
I found Councillor Rob Stewart's intervention really interesting there. And I think it talks of what I was referring to earlier in the podcast around how Welsh local government is potentially structurally at a disadvantage compared to English councils when competing for this funding. I know that's one of the key findings of our research that you authored, Jack, into the Levelling Up programme that we've recently published. And I think Helen Tilley had a really interesting solution to that, in that I think it's going to be very hard for us to get away from those short term funding rounds that are in the system, and we'll never get back to those long programs, multi-year programs that we had under European funding. But being able to have some kind of wider strategy that those funding bids sit within might be really helpful.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that the clip from Rob Stewart was really useful. It showed us on the ground how the Community Renewal Fund is causing problems for local authorities, not just the Welsh Government. And I thought that Dr. Helen Tilley's intervention as well was helpful in a pragmatic way. As much as we've highlighted the issues with the Levelling Up agenda, there have it does look like it's here to stay for the time being. And I think there's some pragmatism to be had in terms of a shared vision for economic development policy, and if there's an informal role for the Welsh Government in convening local authorities' bids to ensure there is at least some Wales-wide economic development strategy going on.
So on from one hot topic, levelling up, onto the other key discussion of our time, which is decarbonising our economy. The concept of the foundation economy is growing in influence in Wales and across the world. Essentially, the idea that there is a subsection of the wider economy that exists because people live in an area, and certain areas of services and manufacturing will exist as a result. These could range from pubs and cafes through to healthcare and schools. And very few wider communities exist without these entities. The role of the foundational economy is therefore of great importance to decarbonisation in Wales, but not all subsections are equal emitters or have the same potential path to decarbonisation. For example, domiciliary social care is a relatively low carbon service, with the main source of emissions being transport of carers moving from house to house. Brewing, however, is a relatively high carbon industry, and there are limited options for lowering the emissions produced. Many of the subsections of the foundational economy cross over multiple ministerial portfolios or departments in Wales in terms of action required to support the lowering of emissions. For example, transport and economic development sit with separate ministers. Wales has made progress towards a more coordinated approach to decarbonisation policy through the creation of the Welsh Climate Change Ministry. This brings together key areas such as housing and transport. However, coordination across departments remains crucial to achieving our net zero goals. During our economy summit, we held a panel debate with a range of experts looking at this very issue. We were pleased to be joined by Gerry Holtham. In public policy, Gerry was head of the General Economics Division in the Economics Directorate at the OECD, so he's very well placed to talk on this issue. We were joined also by Chris Joffe, a consultant to ARUP and recently chair of Welsh Government's Advisory Group on Decarbonisation of Existing Housing. Dr. Laura Reynolds is a research fellow within Cardiff Business School. And Carol Williams is Emeritus Professor in the University of Manchester, where he works on socio-cultural change. So really good panel there to discuss this issue. And I thought that Jerry Holtham summed up the current situation in Wales really well during the panel.
I really resonated to one of the things you said, which is this is going to require joined up public policy. Now, joking apart, joined up public policy, Wales must be the last place on God's earth where that happens. We've traditionally had an extremely siloed system of government in which cabinet ministers did what the hell they liked as long as they didn't disturb the first minister. I think it's improved a little bit, but if we still have a system where the civil servants are arranged into ministries and their own concerns and preoccupations dominate over any interdepartmental cooperation. Now, we have a minister for climate change, but if you consider any of the things that need to be done, that minister has to work extremely closely with, as you said, education and training is extremely important. If we're talking about doing things in agriculture, then there's agriculture is very important. So it's just not going to be possible to tackle this without, I would say, a reform of our system of government. We have to find ways where it's the natural thing to do to put task force together and to work across departments. Otherwise, we're just going to get a lot of glossy documents and expressed hopes, and things just don't happen at the speed that they need to happen. Look at some of the things we need to do. Let's take public transport. 80% of people who have to travel to work in Wales pre-COVID anyway did it by private motor car. 80%. The number going on the railway was something like, I don't know, less than 10%, maybe 5%. And we're getting very pleased with ourselves because we have plans to increase rail use by 50% or even 100%. What the hell good is that going to do? If you want to get commuting by motor car down to, say, even 50%, that means you'd have to quadruple or quintuple rail use. Now, we don't have any plans to quintuple rail use. We're talking ourselves in South Wales, we're talking about a metro which will be finished by 2050 and might double use. So we're just not rising to the height of the crisis, and we're not because we're operating in this siloed way. Carol and I have been involved in looking at the agricultural sector, in particular how Wales might finance afforestation. Now, it seems to me there's a huge opportunity here because the government has this plan to plant 300 million trees, 180,000 hectares of trees by 2050. That's an awful lot of timber, and we have a construction industry which at the moment, there are a couple of companies who use timber-framed construction techniques. We don't have a modern sawmill that could cut the timber. So there's a possibility of saying, right, we're gonna generate an industry which will supply local house builders who will all move to timber frames and away from steel and concrete. And they will use modular construction offsite techniques, and they use domestically grown wood. And this would change both the agricultural sector and the construction sector. But you can see already how many moving parts that plan would have, how many different government departments would have to be concerned in order to make it happen. And at the moment, we just don't have the structures to deliver. We don't have deliberate structures to make things happen.
So that was really interesting from Jerry there. What do you think, Jack and Harry? What are the solutions to the structural issues that he's posing?
I think it's really important what Jerry has highlighted and what we talked about really throughout the day about policy coordination, coordination between ministers, between departments, different agencies. And why that's so important for decarbonisation is because it doesn't operate like a normal technological cycle within the economy. It isn't driven, for instance, by companies coming up with innovations and then by other companies trying to catch up. is governments who are leading decarbonisation with things like legal commitments on carbon emissions, phasing out particular technologies like gas boilers and petrol cars. All of this is being done by regulation and by governments. So governments, including the Welsh government, can't really afford to sit back and wait for industry to figure out solutions. They actually need to get ahead of it and provide a lot more information, a lot more direction than maybe they're providing at the moment. And on that basis, it's important, because if they get it wrong, the risks are either that we don't decarbonize in time, or that all of the cost of decarbonization falls on the wrong people, the people who are least likely to be able to afford it.
Yeah, and I completely agree with Jerry Holthorn on public transport. I think we need a carrot and stick approach to decarbonisation. Yes, penalising fossil fuel use, but also encouraging people onto green modes of transportation too. I think what we're starting to see is a stick-first approach from the Welsh Government. Partly, I think this is because the Welsh Government has a really limited budget, and most of that is spent on health and education services in reality before it even comes to Wales. But what we've seen is we've cancelled road building projects, and in some places we've annoyed rural communities whilst doing it. But are we actually ensuring that people can switch away from cars? I don't think so. There's not more train stations connecting places with extremely affordable tickets. We haven't developed a comprehensive, cheap, rapid bus transport network for villages that are only connected via roads. So I think we've got to be really careful that we're not creating energy for an anti-decarbonisation movement that could be taken up by political actors wanting to capitalise on that. So I think we've really got to be careful that we add some carrot into the Welsh Government's economic environmental policy as well as that stick.
Thanks both. Yeah, I think, you know, the structural issues there are deep and wide, and it was really good to hear from the panel about their thoughts on how we can start addressing those. And, you know, it was very focused on the structural impacts, but I thought it was very interesting to hear from Dr. Laura Reynolds about the changes and how they impact on individuals and the innovations that can come from that ground level, because, you know, let's face it, that's where most innovation comes from. So I'll just play a clip of what Laura had to say.
But instead, maybe we could think about how are we going to achieve this, and how can we do it in a way that supports those groups in our society, in the economy, and those that might be the most impacted along the way. So when we look at all these opportunities that you mentioned in your report around green jobs, I agree. What does that mean? We don't know. But other areas of improving skills and job creation, even. When we're thinking of these opportunities, are we actually asking those that are going to be the most impacted? Do they see these as opportunities? What opportunities might they see? What are the threats? And just listening and engaging with the people, the businesses, the workers that are really likely to feel these impacts. First of all, the ones that will be hit on the ground. And I think in doing so, we need to think about whether we can ask these questions, listen to the responses, and try and reduce some of the potential inequalities that might be expanded if we don't listen to those that will be most impacted along the way. So that would be sort of my take on it. Even when we think about innovations, yes, there are opportunities, but we also know that they're not always equally felt. In fact, largely the opposite, nor are the gains equally distributed. So my approach to this would really be to, in addition to the more structural, the really big questions, is to also to listen to the lived experiences, have that conversation with the workers, with the small businesses that are going to be perhaps the first ones to be impacted along the way, and to get them involved in the transition, to be a partner in it, to be involved in this discussion, as well as the bigger picture as well.
Yeah, I think Laura's points are really crucial there. And we've seen kind of nascent attempts to do this in Wales with the likes of the Blaenau Gwent Citizens Assembly on climate change. And actually, what we find is that the understanding of climate change is incredibly varied across the population. And, you know, how can people possibly go about engaging with the enormous discussions and potential changes that we're going to have to go through until there is a kind of base level, a common denominator of understanding of what the impact will be if we don't take action. I mean, I was wondering, you know, if either of you had any thoughts on that.
So in our wider work on the foundation economy, and we've been looking at this transition, the deindustrialization transition, and what it's going to mean for Wales and for foundational sectors, for small businesses. And I think one of the really striking things is that you can make a really strong comparison with Wales's last big period of economic transition, which was deindustrialization. And very much picking up on what Dr. Laura Reynolds talked about in our discussion. At that time, during that transition, people didn't feel that they were being brought along. They felt that it was something that was being done to them from outside. And it left a very toxic legacy, really, in a lot of industrial communities, almost especially across Wales within the UK, a feeling that people weren't being listened to, that they were being left behind. They lost faith in the political process. They lost faith in political systems. And it really created a kind of base level of anger, which is still present. It's still present today. It hasn't really gone away. And they, you know, there is, I think, strong evidence to link this anger to things like Brexit as well. So it really is a very high stakes process. Getting it wrong, not bringing people along, not only do you risk hurting those people by putting more of the cost on them, but you also risk creating a bit of a monster, creating a lot of anger, creating a lot of resentment against decarbonisation, but also against politics.
Yeah, and I think we're still behind the game on citizens' assemblies and participatory budgeting in Wales. Through the IWA's work on land use in Wales, we've been looking at Scottish policy, and participatory budgeting is really built into Scotland in a fundamental way. There are community-led funds that are targeted at communities, the most deprived communities in Scotland, that allow them to decide how they want to grow their communities out of poverty and deprivation. And that leads to more buy-in. You know, we've seen when communities buy up, including in Wales, post offices or pubs, if they feel like they have a stake in that, they're more likely to use those services, and it can really lead to regeneration in a fundamental way. Jack's just spoken about people losing faith in the political process and of government action on poverty and deprivation being something done to them rather than with them, involving communities via citizens' assemblies or participatory budgeting could mitigate that and mitigate that anger that communities feel that Jack just spoken about.
So from the very foundations of our economy over to global politics now, and I know that you took a look at the final session that we held, which is COP26 and the Welsh economy.
Yeah, so our economy summit ended with a really timely session on what COP26 will mean for the post-COVID-19 green economic recovery in Wales. We heard from Sophie Howell, the world's only Future Generations Commissioner, Edward Evans, Director of the Civil Engineering Contractors Association Wales, Sarah Hopkins, the Director of Cynwyl Cymru Sustain Wales, Andy Regan, Nesta Cymru's Mission Manager for a Sustainable Future, and until recently, the IWA's Policy and External Affairs Manager, and Agatha Decanson, Policy Advisor at the Green Alliance Environment Think Tank. So clearly, this event was driven by the UK's recent hosting of COP26, but it was timely for the IWA too, as we recently published Renewing the Focus, Re-energising Wales 2 years on, a paper authored by Hugh Lloyd and Andy Regan. That report found that Wales has made only limited progress against our recommendations made in the original Re-energising Wales project in 2019. Albeit whilst facing the unprecedented challenges of Brexit and the COVID-19 pandemic. The report therefore outlined three priorities for progress, and they were: number one, making the most of Welsh USPs in marine energy, bioenergy and homes; number two, setting out clearly the projects within these USPs that the Welsh Government will prioritise and support in the short to medium term for the energy system it wants in the long term; number three, developing a two-pronged approach to capability, looking at building public sector capacity and the wider skills of the existing and future workforce.
You know, the IWA's ambition has always been for Wales to play a big role in that on the global stage. And part of what we need to think about to deliver that is the infrastructure. So Wales is taking a kind of planning-based approach. And I think that is important, but I would probably caution against kind of over-planning to an extent, because what we can be pretty certain about is that an infrastructure and energy infrastructure plan published in the next few years, if you look back on that in 30 years' time, that will not be what the system looks like, because there will be innovations and disruptions, hopefully some of which will be really positive. So you can kind of overinvest in really, really granular planning. But what you can do is be really clear about what your kind of macro level plan is. So there's two ways of approaching that. You can take like a Wales for Wales approach, which is all about kind of, you know, how we decarbonize internally what we use, become ever more localized, shorten supply chains. And there's a lot of potential to be gained from that. But actually the question that the IWA work started with is kind of, Peter Davis said it at the event that kind of kicked off the whole thing in 2015, was what does Wales want to be famous for? You start with the question of what does the world need for its entire kind of decarbonisation mission that the work that Wales can provide and, you know, become prosperous in the process.
I think a really important takeaway from this paper was something that Andy Regan said on our COP26 panel event, which is the transition to net zero doesn't have to be inward looking and purely Wales focused, and that we do have unique selling points for Wales that we can benefit from economically as well. The surge of activity that the net zero transition is creating gives a country like Wales, with lots of natural resources when it comes to renewables, a clear opportunity to deliver these for the rest of the world and to benefit economically. Let's now hear a clip from the event from Agathe Sikansen, a policy advisor at the Green Alliance Environment Think Tank.
So we have made progress. I think it's important to note that we are better off globally having had this COP than we would otherwise be. Fossil fuels were mentioned for the first time ever in the text of the agreement, with a commitment to phase down their use and financing. So that was good. I think there was also a greater focus on near-term emission cuts rather than distant targets, 2050 or 2070 targets. And there is now the commitment as well to return to next year's COP with improved targets rather than in 5 years' time. And that's quite significant as well. And we have new pledges from some of the highest emitting countries. And we also had a number of side deals which have been mentioned, like the deforestation deal, a deal on finance, deal on cars and so on. And they do put us on a stronger footing to cut emissions this decade, I think. But as has been said, the Glasgow Climate Pact does not get us on track to 1.5 degrees. It doesn't even get us on track to 2 degrees. We're already at 1.2 degrees of warming, and we can see how deadly the climate crisis can be. And we can see the way that it fuels really dangerous extreme weather events. So what was agreed at COP26, despite the real progress that was made, does not match the scale of the crisis.
So you've just heard Agathe Sikansen, who is a policy advisor at the Green Alliance Environment Think Tank. She's outlined where we've made progress in COP26, and she's outlined the challenges we still face as well. This was in the context of Andy Regan stating that defeatism is the new denialism. So we're looking at green shoots of hope coming out of COP26, whilst not denying the stark reality of the challenges we face. So I'll open this up now to Will and Jack to talk about what we've seen come out of COP26, its implications for Wales, and where Wales goes next in our challenge to decarbonise.
Thanks, Harry. So, yeah, I thought Andy's quote, defeatism is the new denialism, is probably the quote of the conference for me, and I can see that resonating. And I remember I remember Sophie Howe, the Future Generations Commissioner, saying that she'd be stealing that one. So very, very good work from Andy there. Yeah, I think we have to focus on what we can do here in Wales. That's not to say that we shouldn't be outward looking, but you know, our work re-energising Wales and the follow on renewing the focus has really enabled us to influence, for example, Welsh Government's recent deep dive into renewable energy in Wales. And that, some of the recommendations that have recently been released from that are fantastic, in that we're recognising now that Wales has the natural resources, not only to deliver all of our own energy needs, but potentially going forward to actually be an exporter of electricity. And it's not just electricity that we can export. It's the skills and the innovation that come out of developing that the exploitation of those marine assets and bioenergy and the other things that Wales can be a leader in. So I think that's it. I think it's about, on the global scale, playing to your strengths as a nation. We should be worried about the progress that the world is making diplomatically towards this, but we shouldn't let that form into defeatism and stop us from actually doing what we know we can do here in Wales.
I think as well that message about defeatism being the new denialism suggests that what's really important with decarbonisation is tailoring messages so that there are really going to be different messages for different audiences. And what our discussion was really about was, you know, people who work in the detail of looking at decarbonisation. And so they're sort of minded to see maybe where things haven't gone far enough. I think that's something that you don't necessarily want to be the big public message coming out from something like COP26, because ultimately it is as much about convincing people around the world that decarbonisation is an important issue than it is about sort of holding governments to account. So there's a real challenge there, because in a kind of internet age, obviously things are clipped and shared across social media. So people will hear positives and negatives and have to make sense of an awful lot of information. But I think there's a lot of lessons we can learn from COVID-19 in respect of decarbonisation, really, which is that the core headline messages to the public have to be very clear. Don't introduce ambiguities into those. It has to be a very clear message. And there does have to be something positive and something hopeful. And I think very much our panelists did pick up on the kind of hopeful aspect of the role of young people and the role young people played, including, you know, delegations of young people from Wales at COP26, that it really does suggest that there's a kind of generational shift going on in attitudes. So it's going to be really important in coming years just for different policymakers to make sure that they shine enough light on those positive messages.
Thanks, Jack. Yeah, and I was I think that message of hope is a really important one. And I remember in the days when denialism was the new denialism, there was that meme, wasn't there, or what we now refer to as a meme, saying, imagine if climate change isn't real and all we did was clean our rivers and sort our transport and make our houses warmer, and it was all for nothing. And you know, it really harks back to that, I think. So thank you both for the really wide ranging discussion we've had on our economy summit. That just leaves me to announce the publication of the Levelling Up paper that Dr. Jack Watkins has authored, What Does Levelling Up Mean for Wales, which is available on our website now, which we're using to influence the development of the now delayed UK government Levelling Up white paper, which is now due to be published early in 2022. And we're hoping to secure a further opportunity for IWA members to hear from Neil O'Brien MP, the Levelling Up Minister, in the coming weeks and months. I'm Will Henson. I've been joined by Harry Thompson and Dr. Jack Watkins from the policy team at the Institute of Welsh Affairs. We are a registered charity and we're supported by our members. So please do consider joining us as either an individual or organisational member. All the details can be found on our website. Thank you to our colleague, Maureen Furey, for producing the podcast, and Maria Dre for organising the Economy Summit. You can find this podcast on all good podcast providers. Please do review and subscribe, and you can always contact us through our website, on Twitter, or by email. Thank you for joining us.